singing the Beach Boys song, and then like there was a moment where everyone was like, "Oh my God, Montserrat!"
I thought you were gonna say that there was a time at Cassidy's where Zach practiced this joke on you, because I totally see that.
He probably did. He probably put on the Beach Boys like 5 months ago so that he could make this joke.
That Montserrat mystique, boom, boom, boom. Da, da, da,
da, da. Oh God. Okay.
All right. Ready?
Yeah. Let's do this.
All right. Hello, and welcome to Jesuitical, a podcast brought to you by the mystically young, transcendentally hip, and spiritually lay editors of American Media. That lay part means we aren't Jesuits, but we work with them. Join us each week for a smart Catholic take on faith, culture, and the news, often over drinks. I'm Ashley McKinless, and I'm joined by Olga Segura.
Hey, guys.
And Zach Davis.
Hey, everyone. Olga, I'm so proud of you for being here and not... trying to attack all of us.
Yeah. So, what? Explain to the listeners what you're doing right now.
Yeah.
And
so
why.
I'm having a 1 day liquid fast because my church is doing it as a day of solidarity and prayer. I don't even know for what, because at this point I'm so cranky and hungry that I can't keep track of anything.
So yeah. Not only are you not. You're doing dry January, so you're not drinking with us. But you're also not eating any. I did this with my the no food fast thing.
The fasting thing.
Yes.
The no thing food that fasting. Zach will never name.
The no food fasting. With my men's group at my parish, and I was.
You were such a crank. It was terrible.
I was very rude to everyone. And so.
Can you not do that for Lent this year?
Yeah,
that was like imposing penance on all of us.
Yes. It brought me no closer to God, and I think it just like...
drove us away from you.
Yes. So, Olga, I have the utmost respect for you right
yes.
now.
Yes. Thank you. So what isn't Olga drinking this week?
Olga is not drinking, but we are a Negroni, which is... There's not really like a good reason for why we're drinking it, other than I looked in our bar cabinet, and I saw that we had 2 out of the 3 ingredients, and so we just needed to pick up a little vermouth, because we already had the Campari and the gin on hand. So
it's delicious.
This
Thank
is
you.
A Negroni.
Cheers. It does look really delicious too, guys.
It's gross.
It is very bitter.
You don't want
Thank
this,
you.
Olga.
It's good. I don't know if it's delicious. It's not like tasty. It's bitter.
Okay, I'll take that. I'll take that.
Who are we talking to this week, Olga?
So today we're actually talking with Bobby Carley, who is a Jesuit and the founder of Ignatian Yoga, which is a spiritual community that embodies elements of Ignatian spirituality and yoga. And they have classes, workshops, and retreats. So we'll be talking to him about mindfulness and what exactly Ignatian yoga means.
It's a great interview.
But first, Signs of the Times, the part of our show where we sift through the Catholic news of the week so you don't have to. What's our first story, Olga?
So in Northern Ireland, there's been a recent surge in flu cases. So certain parishes have been suspending the sign of the peace. So they're telling people that because of germs, when you go to shake hands and greet each other, it's actually one of the easiest ways to pass germs. So they're telling people to not do this anymore.
Northern Ireland and Northern Brooklyn. My parish has stopped giving out the wine at Mass
really?
Because of the outbreak of the flu.
I thought that was because Father was thirsty. I would like to suspend that moment of the sign of peace where I go in for a hug and the person next to me goes in for a handshake and I just kind of get stabbed by their hand.
Oh God, you're a
hugger? So that moment of, yeah, of course. But that
strangers?
Moment of,
they're like,
everybody. Okay. Well, it's weird because I'll go to hug the people around me that I know and then...
You don't want other people to feel left
yeah,
out.
Yeah, I don't know. So much to their chagrin, I go in for the hug and it's,
yeah.
I would like to suspend that moment of awkwardness.
Okay. Well, I don't like that we're not doing the peace or the wine because, you know, I feel like if we can't risk... a little bit of a stomach bug for communion and Jesus's blood, then what are we here for?
Yeah, and you can just do what I do. You could still greet everyone and just sanitize your hands privately when you go sit back down.
And I'm fairly
certain... I don't believe in hand sanitizer either, but...
I'm fairly certain that that little cloth that's being used to wipe the chalice definitely is getting rid of all of the germs miraculously.
Just Lord.
100%. I have no doubts.
All right. What's next, Zach?
So our next story comes from Poland, where dozens of clergy in cassocks are participating in the 14th Alpine Ski Championship, started in honor of St. John Paul II, who was an avid skier and Polish.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a competition where lay people, religious, priests all get together and in the spirit of healthy competition, ski down the mountain.
I thought cassocks were optional.
Cassocks are optional.
Okay.
But it does make for a better photo. If,
yeah, it does.
No, definitely.
So in the spirit of the Winter Olympics, good luck to all our priests skiing out there.
What's next, Ashley?
All right. In a new book by an Italian journalist called All Francis's Men, Cardinal Beniamino Stella, the head of the Vatican's Congregation for Clergy, says that we should consider ordaining older married men of good character to be priests to, you know, serve the Eucharist in isolated areas. So places in the Amazon or in the Pacific Islands, there are, you know, people will go months without actually getting the Eucharist because there is such a shortage of priests. So he's not saying that, you know, any immediate change is coming, but he's saying we should be open to the question, which is something Pope Francis has already said.
We should be open to study. Right. And it's notable, yeah, because, as you pointed out, because it's who said it. Yeah. So it's a prefect for the, what was it? The
Congregation for Clergy.
Which seems very relevant and very high up. And also that it's important to note that we already have married priests in some parts of the Catholic Church.
Yeah, people who have come from like the Anglican Church, is that right?
Yes, and in other rites. So the Catholic Church is made up of 23 rites. The Latin rite is one, but there are other Eastern rites, especially where there are Catholic priests. But it's I actually got to write an explainer on this last year when it came up, when Pope Francis wrote it. So check that out at AmericanMagazine.org. I'll probably be reposting it. So check out my own Twitter timeline for the brand.
I like the word they use, veri probati. So that's
veri probati.
Oh, dang it!
Veri probati.
How probity is it? Very.
Which means proven virtue.
Yes.
Men of proven virtue. So it's not like they're going to like let like 23-year-old newlyweds become priests.
They do seem very intent on like the idea of discerning marriage and the priesthood at the same time is not good. So like that you've already proven that like you're married and you can do it and it's not going to confuse certain things. But I don't know. This is a healthy sign. It's important because they're looking at the grassroots level. So like where in the local communities is this necessary? Because like at some point you have to choose like what's more important, celibate priest or the Eucharist. Yeah. And that's a no-brainer for Catholics.
So priest shortage is certainly an issue that's facing the church. But another big issue that the church is facing is it's young people. So what do you have, Ashley?
Going Gone is the name of a new report by St. Mary's Press in collaboration with the Center for Applied Research in the Apostolate at Georgetown University. So they did a comprehensive study of, you know, people between 15 and 25 who have disaffiliated from the church. So what we usually call the nuns. And they asked them...
N-O-N-E-S.
Yes, not... Our other favorite topic is the other nuns. So yeah, so people who have left the church. And so it's not just like, you know, survey data. They, you know, sat down and had conversations with these young people and asked them, why did they leave? So some of the big studies are... Some of the big findings were almost 13% of young adults in the U.S. between 18 and 25 are former Catholics. So, like, that's a big chunk that are former Catholics.
It's like an entire religious subgroup, right?
But interestingly, of these people, almost half of them are, they haven't given up on God. They're still looking for another faith expression or practice that better aligns with their sense of spirituality. So, Zach, you went to an event in Baltimore where they presented these findings, right?
Yes. So I was at the launch or the release of the study where there was a panel that was recorded live for Minnesota Public Radio where they sort of broke open the stats that were found and some of the stories that were told. Some of the more surprising things were that 74% left between the ages of 10 and 20, and the average age of disaffiliation was 13.
Wow.
Which is when people started to no longer identify as Catholic. So they could still have been brought to Mass or whatever, or not.
That feels like a lot younger than I would have expected.
I think that in my own, you went to Catholic school, so I think, you know, you kind of have that built in. But for me, when it was just like Mass and Sunday school, I do think around middle school where like your social life or sports became more important and your family was less important, like you're, you know, it kind of became a chore to like go to Sunday school. And so I can see in my own life, it definitely became less important to me around that age.
You know, more than the social aspects, so like friends and sports and other things that were going on Sunday. Also, 13 is sort of when you start asking big questions, right?
Yeah.
Like, and if you don't have good answers to big questions, it's really easy to just kind of be like, these people are kind of all full of it, right?
Yeah.
I don't know about you guys, but I can see like distinct moments in my life where if things went a certain way, I have a very similar life, but one where in which I am not really engaged in my Catholic
faith. Right. Yeah, I think I, like Ashley mentioned, I've gone to Catholic school my whole life and I work in Catholic media. So if I often take that for granted, but I think if I didn't, it seems so shocking to me to have people at age 10 kind of identifying this way, but because I had very clear models of faith in my life since I came to this country, you know? But I could totally see if I didn't have that, I would be living a life that's very similar to a lot of my secular friends, you know?
And having gone to public school and, you know, I went to Sunday school with a lot of people, and I can probably count on one hand the number of those people who are still affiliated with the church. And one of the most common answers respondents to this survey gave was, you know, you don't need to have religion to be a good person.
Right.
And I look at, you know, I look at my friends who don't go to church every week or ever, and I'm like, they have a point. Like,
yeah.
You don't have to go to church to be a quote unquote good person. So I think there needs to be a more, the church has to have an answer to that.
Totally. Well, and I feel like everyone is sort of looking for, this came out in the conversation around the release, is that everyone was looking for the one thing that would make young people care more. And I, like, whether that, a lot of people brought up the sex abuse crisis, which I don't think that's why millennials are disaffiliating. People brought up, like, different doctrinal issues, like you don't just believe in the teachings. But then again, you can find just as many people who, you know, disagree with certain church teachings but stay Catholic as who leave. So I don't know if that's it. I don't think there's a silver bullet necessarily. In my own life, it just became like someone gave a crap about me in the church, right? Someone, you know, took an interest in me, you know, in my own life, in my own suffering, in my own joys, in my own questions, took them seriously, gave them thoughtful answers, and then, you know, invited me back to other things. And that happened in a youth group environment for me. It happened, it can happen in a Catholic school environment for others. It can happen in a family environment for other people. But if that doesn't happen to you, inertia is going to pull you away, I think. Right? It right now, it takes an intervention into your life to pull you back in.
Yeah. And I think, I just to maybe end on like a more hopeful note, like, just because someone says at age 13 that they're done with the Catholic Church does not necessarily mean they're a lost cause.
Like, I knew it all at 13, okay. Ashley.
I really didn't. I mean, I really took ownership of my faith in college when I didn't have someone dragging me there and I had to make a conscious decision of whether I was going to go or not. So I think, you know, it would be very silly to give up on someone for who considers themselves a nun at age 10.
Yeah, totally.
All right. What's next?
So Pope Francis just got back from his trip to South America, but on his flight to Peru,
I feel like the biggest news always happens on the plane.
It does. Yeah. And it's, you know, most of the time it's because he's given an interview. Pope Francis has given an interview or something or said something crazy, but that's not really the case this time. This time he married two flight attendants.
Wait, he married them?
Well, he celebrated the marriage.
Okay, got it.
And so on the flight, he was talking to two of the flight attendants who explained that they were civilly married, but the church that they wanted to get married in had been destroyed in an earthquake while they were planning their wedding. And so they never got around to getting married in the church. And Pope Francis was like, you want to do this right here, right now? And like, Pope is like, put up or shut up. I'm right here. Let's do it. And I don't think you say no to that, really.
No,
right?
You do not.
Like,
nope.
The Pope is like, you want to get married right now? It's like, yes, yeah. 100%.
We have a great video, an interview with these two flight attendants right after it happened. And they're just so happy.
Yeah.
It's such a beautiful event. And like, there was pushback, right?
There's a little pushback. Like, some people are like, did they go through pre-Cana? How did the Pope know that? But also, I mean, like, it's important to recognize, like, what the Pope was doing was, on the one hand, a PR stunt, right? Because he wanted to show that, you know, if you maybe got married in a secular way,
at a courthouse,
on the beach, or whatever, and you haven't gotten it recognized by the church is still here, and you should consider, you know, having your sacrament recognized by that community.
It's never too late. All right, what's next, Olga?
In other Pope Francis news, during a flight in Chile, Pope Francis was asked about his support of Bishop Juan Barros. Now, this Bishop Barros, allegedly, he's being accused of covering up the sexual abuse of a priest called Fernando Caradima. One victim, Juan Carlos Cruz, even claims that Barros was present while he was being abused by Caradima. And Pope Francis stated that the day they bring me proof against the bishop, then I will speak. He's since apologized, saying, and he's asked victims for forgiveness, but it's still kind of problematic because he said that he shouldn't have said proof. He should have said evidence because he doesn't want to judge this bishop without there being concrete evidence against him.
Sounds like a pretty Jesuitical apology.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the worst way.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Again, as you said, we have eyewitness accounts, which mm-hmm. are.
Mm-hmm. And eyewitness accounts are mm-hmm. what he's using to, you know, condemn the priest of this initial mm-hmm. abuse. But mm-hmm. that same eyewitness account is not enough to, you know, hold this bishop accountable.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And it just, you know, Pope Francis has done a lot to kind of begin to repair the church's handling of the sexual abuse crisis. But this is still very tone deaf, and it very much undermines what victims are feeling in this moment. And a lot of people are rightly frustrated by him.
Right. Like, if you don't have concrete, like, documented mm-hmm. proof, then no one's going to believe you. Mm-hmm. I think is a message that some people get.
And yeah. like, what this was happening in the age before, most of the abuse was happening in the age before people had like cell phones mm-hmm. to like take out and record things. Like mm-hmm. all you have is eyewitness accounts mm-hmm. usually.
Right. Right.
So yeah, this is definitely, I think, a blind spot in mm-hmm. Pope Francis's papacy so far. So, but I think he is getting pushback and hopefully
he's open to listening to that. Mm-hmm. Right. I don't know. Listeners, what do you think? Did you pay attention to this? Have you been paying attention to how Pope Francis has handled the sex abuse crisis in the Catholic Church? What do you think? Let us know. Send us an email at jesuitical@americamedia.org.
Now joining us via Skype is Bobby Carley, SJ. He is the founder of Ignatian Yoga. Welcome to Jesuitical, Bobby.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Yeah, we're very excited. So I know Ignatian Yoga draws on Ignatian spirituality and yoga, and you offer classes, workshops, and retreats. So what exactly happens on one of your retreats?
Well, it's quite similar to other Ignatian retreats with a talk from one of the teachers, and then some reflection time, some small group time, some group prayer, journaling time. But instead of sitting in chairs and or at a table and listening, you're on a yoga mat.
Can you explain Ignatian yoga? Because I know both of the terms separately, but is there anything specifically about Ignatian spirituality that lends itself to the practice of yoga? Like, could you just as easily have like Dominican yoga or Franciscan yoga? Or
I guess the yoga itself isn't like we're not designing a new style of yoga. It's more we do yoga and we're on an Ignatian retreat, or we're doing yoga and I'm a Jesuit teaching it. But so it's not like something that's a totally different style of yoga that we're creating, but it's typically a slower paced, intentional style of yoga. And especially at the end, in the final resting pose, would be inviting maybe reading the Sushupe, the Take Lord Receive prayer, or some beginning or ending with an Ignatian prayer or some Ignatian concept.
So Bobby, is everyone who goes on these retreats Catholic, or do you get a mix of different denominations?
Yeah, all are welcome. We actually did a Google Form survey that's before this one coming up in New York, and majority, pretty much everybody is Catholic. There's a couple lapsed Catholics and a couple Catholic converts, but all are welcome. We've had some of the retreats. We've had people who just know one of the teachers and who aren't Catholic and who don't know anything about Ignatian spirituality and come, and they've been like, wow, this thing, Ignatian spirituality, is pretty cool. And I've actually met a few people have come up to me after retreats and talked about vocations. So I like to tell my superiors, you know, it checks the box of vocation promotion and evangelization and all that. So yeah.
Yeah, because I would imagine that, I mean, it's yoga, I feel like, has sort of exploded in popularity in the United States among young people. And I would imagine while religion is doing the opposite of that among young people, this would be a way to sort of maybe bridge that gap.
Yeah. So it's looking at, okay, where are people? Where are young people these days? And like what the study a couple of years ago said, 36 million people. It's probably now over 40 million people in the United States are doing yoga. So where do we could keep these separate, right? Of like, you can be Catholic or you can practice yoga. And I think that's what a lot of people have heard, is like these two are incompatible. They can't be connected. Or we could say, well, wait, let's take this. This seems to be a helpful tool, a helpful vehicle for opening oneself up to Christ. And that's where I'm inspired by you guys, a smart Catholic take on news and politics. That's kind of what as I listen to you guys, I try to think of, okay, how can we be a smart Catholic take on yoga?
Nice. I like that.
So can yoga you kind of described it as being a tool we can use. Can yoga just be, can it just be stretching, or does it always come with kind of a more spiritual aspect that you have to either integrate or ignore? I don't know. Like when my parents do yoga, I'm pretty sure they're just stretching because they're worried about like being mobile in their older years. Is that how you see it? Or do you kind of integrate the spiritual side of yoga and the physical part of it?
Yeah, this is the big question. So what is yoga? What's the authority on yoga? Can yoga just be exercise? Is it spiritual? So I think there is a whole range, and it's been adapted and practiced in many ways. For me, though, yoga is... it connects the spiritual, the physical, the athletic. As I practice yoga, it opens me up. Like I found in that first year of practicing yoga, I was at the end of a class. I just come from a come and see weekend at the Jesuit novitiate that was in Michigan at the time. And on Sunday evening, I went to a yoga class, was lying there in the Shavasana final resting pose. And I had a moment where I felt the embrace of Jesus holding me in his arms, wiping the sweat and tears from my face. And so I thought, well, did I manufacture that? Where did that come from? But I don't know what that was exactly. But I think it showed me that two things. One, that I think yoga helps me get out of my head into my heart. And when I can get out of my head and more connected to the body and to my heart, I think that's where God can speak to me more. And also I found in that moment that this calling, this vocation was something real and something I had to pay attention to. And so I think yoga very much helped me make that next step to enter the Jesuits.
It kind of reminds me of that old joke about Franciscan and a Jesuit. Both of them wanted to smoke while they prayed the breviary, and the Franciscan asked his superior if he could smoke while he prayed his breviary, and the superior says, no, what, goodness, no, you know, you should be focused. Whereas the Jesuit, you know, goes to his superior and he says, hey, is it all right if I pray my breviary while I smoke?
Right. Right. I like that. So,
did you have a form of conversation like that with your own superior?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly tentative at first of like when I entered the Jesuits of how much they would support this. And that's a question people ask me a lot, like, are you supported by, I think it's the important thing is being discerning, being prudent in all of this. And so I think having those superiors who've been able to find that and discover, is this of the good spirit? Right. And that's that constantly discerning, right? How to integrate, this spirituality in a mindful, intentional, thoughtful, intelligent way.
Yeah, so Bobby, when we mentioned to our listeners that we would be interviewing you and kind of talking about Ignatian spirituality, one of the questions that came up was, is this a form of cultural appropriation, using yoga in this way? So mm-hmm. kind of how do you answer that when you get those kind of questions?
Yeah, good question. I actually saw that on Twitter. I'll wait and see if you guys throw that one at me. I mean, it's the yogis brought this to the West, right, and shared it with people. So you had Swami Vivekananda, right, in the late 19th century, Yogananda, Iyengar, right, they're bringing these teachings to the West and sharing it, and they're saying, use this in so much as it helps, right? This is not religion. You don't have to be to worship this god. You don't have to be Indian to do this. So I guess I look to them and say, like, no, yes, yoga is connected to Indian culture, as this is the majority of its history came out of an Indian context, but it's not necessarily Hindu. These two have a lot of are connected, but yoga is also, Buddhists have done it, Jain people have done it. The first actually translation of the Yoga Sutras was by Al-Biruni, a Muslim man in Arabic, right? So it's been adapted and used and appropriated in many ways. So I don't think it's something to necessarily a harmful cultural appropriation necessarily. Mm-hmm. I think it's important to be aware of what this is, to be aware of what you're saying, right? To be aware if you're using Sanskrit chants, to know what they mean, and to be a respectful visitor, right? If you're going into a space to pray with somebody of a different religious tradition, it's like, know what you're doing, know what's happening. So I think it's all about intentionality, right? What's your intention?
I was going to ask, because so the way it has been appropriated, you know, in the popular imagination, it's kind of for upper middle classes shopping at Lululemon, buying really expensive yoga gear. But that, yeah. As a Jesuit, I don't think that's your audience mainly, right? Like you take this to different populations generally.
Yeah, so it could be the audience. I mean, certainly a lot of people that come on the retreat are people who can, who maybe wear Lululemon, and that's okay. They're welcome to.
All are welcome at this, yeah. In this place, right?
Yeah, so I want, you know, I think Ignatian yoga can reach people everywhere, right? On all different, I think people could benefit from Ignatian spirituality and yoga from regardless of your socioeconomic level or race, ethnicity, gender, age. So I hope that through the retreats we'll be able to generate some income to be able to then offer retreats. And we actually, last week I had a conversation with the Ignatian Spirituality Project, who offer the spiritual exercises to homeless populations, actually people facing homelessness. If I was listening to your show last summer, that fellow who went to like Scranton, who builds mini houses for the homeless,
Lemoyne,
and I remember
Lemoyne.
So I'm learning from your show. But offer, so if we can find a connection here,
build some mini yoga studios.
Yeah, right. Mini yoga studios. No, but being able to team up with Ignatian Spirituality Project and teach yoga, to offer it to people in jails. That's where I kind of got my start, was teaching on the Pine Ridge Reservation in South Dakota. Yeah, I think it's reaching all populations.
Is there a tradition of, like, I don't know, a natural connection I see here is like the importance of posture in prayer, right? Is there something in the Christian tradition that speaks to that importance, or in the Ignatian tradition?
Yeah, so, well, there's a bit in the spiritual exercises. At the beginning, one of the annotations is assume the posture that works best for you, possibly walking, so using some form of exercise perhaps before. So St. Ignatius doesn't say too much about posture, a little more than he does about chastity, which is be like the angels. It's pretty much all he says about chastity, but not much more about the physical.
Helpful, St. Ignatius. Thanks a lot.
Setting the bar pretty high.
But certainly different traditions, different centering prayer has been used a lot in like the Benedictines and Trappists. So I think there is some, but...
Well, I think that's one of the first things that if you take someone who's not raised Catholic to a Catholic mass, one of the first things they point out, it's like almost a joke, is how much they're sitting, standing, kneeling, right? So, I mean, even you don't have to go that far back into the tradition, but I think compared with other maybe mainline Christian traditions in the United States.
Yeah. What else? What do you guys think? What are other areas of connection do you find possibly between yoga and Ignatian spirituality or yoga and Catholicism?
That's a good, the posture thing, I think, is one of the things that made a lot of sense to me. I remember being in youth group and someone telling me that, like, you should put your arms out like you were getting crucified when you were meditating on that. And like, that's a little much, I think, but also like instructive, or like the importance of actually kneeling if you were praying in your home, if you haven't done that before, just to like switch things up and like be in new place. Like, your body's important, and how your body is responding to prayer, I think, matters a lot. And it's something that we ignore. We think of it as something that happens in the head only.
Yeah.
I don't know. What do you guys think? I've only tried yoga once, and I was so bad at it.
I've practiced yoga on and off for a few years. And I think that one of the way it helps me is, like, Bobby, you were mentioning earlier that it kind of really helps to calm your mind and kind of quell all of this anxiety that someone might have. And I think when I find that I've been practicing yoga, it helps me be more mindful, and it actually makes me think less of myself and actually think more of the people around me. And I think that very much helps me to find God in whatever situation I'm at, if I'm much more present. And I don't think I would be able to have that mindfulness if it wasn't for the yoga that I was practicing.
No, I'm very self-conscious when I'm doing yoga.
I'm like,
am I doing this right?
I'm awful at it, but I'm like,
why can't I touch my toes?
I was in a park full of people, And I was the only person that the instructor walked up to and said, you know, you can just lie on your back if this hurts.
Child's pose.
And I said, no, nothing hurts.
But I think that's kind of the community that you get when you go into like a yoga space, that it's really non-judgmental. It's just everyone kind of...
I felt very judged in that moment.
Well, aside from Zach, I feel like it is very much a space where people are just encouraging and just much more mindful than you might be on a regular day. I don't know.
This is something that came up when we were prepping for this interview is, you know, in terms of something that the church could take from yoga. Zach mentioned that like when you go to a yoga studio, mm-hmm. your instructor knows your name and mm-hmm. like is wondering where you are if you don't show up one week, which, you know, is not really the case.
If you don't show up to mass, no one's texting me and being or sending me an email saying like, we noticed you weren't here.
The yoga studio I go to sends me postcards with like handwritten postcards. So that sense of community really is there.
Yeah.
All right. So maybe, listeners, you could find this sense of community and some Ignatian spirituality if you go on the retreat with Bobby Carly. So can you give us the information about how listeners could get free passes to the retreat on February 2nd to 4th?
Sure. So on IgnatianYoga.com, we have a... can go there, but also the Facebook page. So to get to enter, we sold out the retreat after Jim Martin made a post back in November. We got the Father Jim Martin bump.
Got the bump.
Best.
I thought I would try to outdo Jim Martin here because it's probably the only way I could do it is you guys often give away his books, right, on the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I give away two free passes for the upcoming sold out retreat. So if you're interested in going on that, you can go to the Facebook page, like the Facebook page, and share it with a friend. And we'll be randomly selecting one of the person who shares the post next Tuesday. So it's a quick turnaround. The retreat's coming up next weekend. But if you don't have a chance or don't have the weekend and you're in the New York area, we're going to be doing an evening at St. Francis Xavier Parish in Chelsea, Jesuit Parish. And
that's not sold out yet? So people can still do it?
That's not sold out. No, we should have plenty of space.
Okay.
We're going to have them do it in the church there and talk about a welcoming space. It's such a beautiful welcoming community at St. Francis Xavier. So I feel really blessed to be able to offer yoga in that space.
And we should mention that Brother Joe Hoover, who is a former guest of the show, is mm-hmm. also helping out on this retreat too.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Bobby, this has been really great. One final question for you. If you could canonize anyone, living or dead, Catholic or non-Catholic, who would it be and why?
Yes, the part I was most excited for.
Nice.
So the person who I've been thinking about for a while that would be Nikki Myers. So Nikki Myers started Yoga of 12-Step Recovery. So she was brought together yoga and the 12 steps. And so she's been a real inspiration for this, for Ignatian Yoga. So through her own experience of being in recovery, she was a drug addict. She was a sex worker in the 80s. She was got sober, relapsed again, and it wasn't until the mid-90s when she found both yoga and the 12 steps helped her stay sober. And so she travels all over the world and is a pretty big name in the yoga community. So check out Nikki Myers, Yoga of 12-Step Recovery. She's amazing.
All right.
Great.
Bobby, awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's such an honor to be talking with you all.
Great.
All right.
Have a good one.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Now it's time for some listener feedback. Last week, we talked about one of our signs of the times was whether Catholic churches should be keeping their doors literally open more often.
So, yes, so not locked.
Not locked. So yes. You could go up to a Catholic church at 10 p.m. and walk in and pray.
Or at 2 a.m.
Or mm-hmm. 2 a.m.
Or 4:31.
And we got a lot of feedback on this. One email came from Luz Baez Tackett. So she talked about how recently her father was dying and she was trying to get in contact with her parish to find someone to bring communion to him and do the anointing of the sick. And she, you know, called the parish and just got the runaround. She couldn't get there between 9 and 5 because she had work. They were closed on holidays so she couldn't go then. So she was just very frustrated by this process. So she told us, it's not always that the literal doors of the church are closed, but the heart and service we profess to live by is often closed. So
the sense that the sacraments are only available 9 to 5, I think, is mm-hmm. really troubling.
Right.
Yeah.
And then Rose from Canada, who works as a pastoral assistant in an inner city parish that works in an area known for substance abuse and homelessness, writes that she was disappointed that the point of view we expressed on the show seemed to be very far removed from the reality of parishes in non-affluent areas. She points out that if they ever left the church unlocked, it would be vandalized and the safety of staff and parishioners would be very much at risk, which is valid, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So thank you to Luz and Rose. We always love hearing from listeners. So please write to us at jesuitical@americanmedia.org. And don't forget to go to our Twitter page if you want to enter for the two spots at the Ignatian Yoga Retreat. We have instructions there. All right. Now it's time for Consolations and Desolations, the part of our show where we talk about where we found God this week and where it was harder to find God. What do you have, Zach?
So this week I have a desolation. This past Friday was the March for Life, which is something I've been to many times, both as, you know, as a high school student, as a college student, as a reporter. And I wasn't there this year, but I was sent into a period of desolation because of President Trump speaking at the march. The cause is something I spent a lot of, I've put a lot of time and energy into. I was president of the Pro-Life Club at my university. I've, you know, helped out at women's shelters. I've been to the march. And something about seeing President Trump and the policies that he's represented in other areas just felt sort of farcical. You know, Catholic News Agency reported that there were some DACA protesters that showed up to the march, mm-hmm. and some of the marchers started chanting "build that wall" at them at the March for Life, and so stories like that, just I was in this movement, I still am in this movement, this pro-life movement, and a few years back I felt very hopeful that maybe we were making a shift in connecting with people and changing hearts and minds, and it seems recently that we've just sort of gone all in on winning at all costs. And the gospel doesn't necessarily call us to win, but it calls us to change hearts and minds. So my not being able to see hope in this movement has brought me desolation this week.
Yeah.
Yeah. What do you got, Ashley?
Yeah, I also have a desolation. So last week we talked to Carrie Weber about this new survey that America has about women in the church. And I know I shouldn't be surprised anymore that like reaction to things online can be very hurtful and mean and trollish. Mm-hmm. But just being so involved in this and knowing how much work Carrie put into it. And then when we released this survey, like almost like uniformly on Twitter, were just people just like mad that we had even asked women these questions and like questioning the validity of it and just like saying very hurtful things about quote unquote real Catholics. That was frustrating because, you know, we profess to work in a media ministry. So we don't have the option of just like writing these people off as internet trolls. Like we know that it's a real person on the other end of the computer and they profess to be Catholic. So I guess the desolation is like I did not find a place in all this to like move forward productively. I don't know how to respond to people in social media in a way that, you know, shows them Jesus or brings them closer to Jesus or brings me closer to Jesus. It just seems like this kind of like cesspool that I've yet to figure out the light in. Yeah. So that was hard. What about you, Olga?
I've got a consolation this week. So I've mentioned in past episodes that Enoch, my boyfriend, and I go to this community group weekly. And I was very apprehensive. We've been going for about 2 or 3 months, I think.
Are these the people that are making you not eat food today?
No. Okay. These are not the people. These are not the people.
I'm sorry.
These are not them. So I've been going there for 2 or 3 months, and I was very apprehensive about it. It's everyone is predominantly white. They're a lot wealthier, and I was just like, they're not going to be able to relate to me. I'm this woman of color from the Bronx, and I'm not going to learn anything from these people. So I've been very like hesitant to like kind of get to know them. And then last week, we kind of switched. Normally, everyone goes in, you read some scripture, then you talk about it. But last week, they completely changed the format. And it was just like, hey, what's going on in everyone's life? And like, let's pray together. And this one woman was sharing how either her daughter or her daughter's friend had just had a stillborn and like how that had affected them. And then we all kind of prayed together. And I just had this moment where I was like, oh, my God, these people have, one, opened the doors to their homes to me, one. Two, they're sharing their joys and sorrows, like, with us in a space and just being super vulnerable. And then I was just kind of like, you have to be more humble and just be more open. Like, everyone here is, like, we're all people of God, and I can't judge them for that, you know? And just once I was able to kind of get off of my own high horse, it was really nice to just realize that you are literally seeing God in the experiences of these people, even if they look very different than you do, you know? So that was very consoling for me.
That's awesome. And good for you for having an open mind like that. I should have one towards Twitter trolls, I guess.
It's hard, though. Twitter trolls, it's really hard. I just mute them. That's how I do with them.
All right, Ashley, get us out of here.
All right. Jesuitical is brought to you by American Media and produced by Eloise Blondio. Our editor is Noah Levinson. Jesuit formation provided by Eric Sundrup, SJ. Engineering by Angelo Jesus Conta. Adverbs provided by me. Our logo is by Sean Tripoli. You can follow us on Twitter at Jesuitical Show. And please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your favorite podcasts and leave us a review. Shout out this week to BibleMan333. K.AD.E and Tip Africa. And send us your questions, feedback, and cocktail recipes, and tell us where you found God this week at jesuitical@americanmedia.org. For American Media, I'm Ashley McKinless with Olga Segura and Zach Davis. We will see you next week.